Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I've an SFB Online, Fed Come Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us, we have a talk guest every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions, the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web, just go to the Talks website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me, you can reach me via Skype. My Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGMES. And if you want to follow me on the Twitters, I have an account there called sfuoncall, where I announce this beautiful podcast. And that's sfuoncall. Also, I have a personal account called Paul Franz. So to find me on Twitter, just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. It's PaulFranz. There's no T in that. And, of course, my account for my business, Franz Games, FranzGMES. And, of course, the lovely talk guest, Guest Turner Podcast, available on iTunes and various feeds around the web, including sfuoncall.com. Just remember my website. Some quick news from ADB this week. They were had study work on different projects. Gene and Leanna have decreed that we must finish the five easy pieces. The Gorn Master Starship book, Call to Arms Starfleet Book 2. The GURPS Prime Directive Vision Revision, Starfleet Universe Index. And also the Merchants of Federation, which I can't wait for that and get a copy of that so I can read through that and possibly even play. That'd be fantastic if we could do that. But noted that the work needed to continue on reducing the BBS bloat, which in my case was pretty simple. I've already archived any of the BBS threads for when it comes to the tournaments for my section. Haven't done that for the Warlord stuff. I really need to do that. Moving on to what actually Steve Cole did work on last week, which was, of course, Capsule number 53, the flap list, you know, get things just completed and done there. Also, when it comes to, Scott worked on art for the Grandmaster Starship book and miscellaneous stuff on Shapeways. Also, Steve Petrick was busy working on SFB updates. Also, the Tholian Master Starship book and Grandmaster Starship book, which is awesome to see. Gene also is working on the Capus Log number 53 flap list, in addition to managing Facebook, you know, talking to people there as they post it up on the page. Also, keeping any spam on the BBS, you know, eliminate any spam on the BBS that does occur, which it does ever so often. Moving on to the SFB Online tournament, we have the Sapphire Star Tournament number 1. 7 of the 8 games have been completed. The only game that has not been completed is basically because of one of the opponents was on vacation for the past 2 weeks. He should be back, I'm guessing, this week, and they should get it done this week because they have to get it done this week, or Bill will be, Bill Scheller is the one who went on vacation, will probably be then kind of disqualified, kicked out of the tournament, and so forth. And we'll move on. And moving on, when it comes to online client stuff, actually, I did get some stuff done there. I fixed the issue with the turn mode chart so that you actually can read it. This is going to be on in next release. It's not sent out yet. It has not been released. Also, I'm middle of working on fixing multi-ship tractors for the most part. There are some things that I will definitely not be working on because I looked at it. It's like, okay, if you have all these ships that are all the same movement cost, basically they're all equivalent, in that case, the players get to choose. It's like, no, we ain't doing that. We are not doing that because that will just take way too much coding. And I think that section will be minor compared to what they really want fixed, which is like one large ship, like a dreadnought, hauling some other smaller ships. I think that's the main main scenario that I think Frank and I forget Devilish one. I forget his real name off the top of my head. And when it comes to library progress, unfortunately, there was no progress for this week. Frank is actually on vacation, and the last thing Frank did get done was mainly for fixing up the third gen SSD, and that process there for having him actually have a copy, access to a copy of the library, and just upload it directly, and then have me update the library directly, you know, do a copy, you know, for the updates, is actually working out quite well at the moment. It speeds things up a bit. Obviously, the current slowness is caused by me not having enough time to get around to it. But at the very least, then he does all the tough part, which is getting things updated and put in the right format. I don't have to modify. I don't have to fix the file names or anything like that. So that definitely is helping out a tremendous amount. And just a reminder, the percent complete is still stuck at 74.5%. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me. It's the one, the only, Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we've got Barry with us so we can discuss the topic of the month. At least the past month, it seems like we've been talking about the Omega tournament ships, you know, some of the tactics involved, sometimes just discussing some of its failings and some of its benefits, you know, things that are available on the ship. And tonight is going to be one of those interesting discussions in that there's this one ship, one empire called the Prober. It's mm-hmm. weird spelling. Reminds me of, what is it? Was it back in early aughts, I think it was? When the whole idea was you had domain names, which you removed the vowels to spell a word. I was like, okay, that's a weird way of doing a name for a website, but okay. In this case, it's kind of like that. It's P-R-O-B-R. It's... Mm-hmm. But it's still pronounced Prober. Somehow it got that way. Okay, that's fine. But we're going to discuss this tournament ship. Now, the issue with this tournament ship is that this ship is one of the ones that that Barry has been having difficulty to actually what's that?
I've found it impossible to get. Good balance.
Balance, yes. That's the word.
Yes.
And I did some reading, did some looking at some of the I got some ideas. Some of them would make the Prober just a tiny bit unstandard based on the standard Prober ships, but I don't see an option here, you know?
Yeah. Well, the cruiser is pathetic. And so, and the dreadnought is, if you gave the dreadnought cruiser shields, it might be possible for a standard Alpha tournament cruiser to defeat it. It's that pathetic.
Right. Again, one of the weapons, well, the main weapon is an awful weapon.
It really is. It's called a heat.
Right. And the goofiness about this heat weapon, it really isn't that powerful.
No, it's not.
It's the most powerful. It reminds you of a Plasma F. Now, a cruiser with four Plasma Fs. And what's worse of the four Plasma Fs? You've got, at least for the tournament cruiser, you've got four PQ1s, basically phaser 1s.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Two phaser 2s. And four phaser 3s. Yep. The four phaser 3s are kind of standard. That's not too bad, you know, big deal. But when it comes to direct fire punch, it's got nothing.
Well, having said that, the quad phasers are much weaker than standard alpha phasers.
Now, okay.
But the 2 is different than a regular 2 in that in some circumstances more powerful than a 1.
Oh, agreed.
So it's not like you say, yeah. But it's... Go ahead.
I totally agree. Only thing I was going to mention is when it comes to the PQ3s, in some cases, they're more powerful than the alpha P3s.
Yeah.
When you get outside of the range 1, you know, when you go to like 3 through 7,
yeah,
it's more powerful than the standard alpha phaser 3s.
All the PQs at long range are more powerful than the standard phasers.
Yep.
But at shorter ranges, they just don't get any more powerful. That's the problem.
Don't try to do a knife fight with this ship.
No, it will not knife fight at all. And the heat is... When you compare it to a Plasma F, remember, its max damage is 16, not 20. So it's less powerful than a Plasma F. And it takes more power to charge than a Plasma F. And the one good thing it has is that it can be fast loaded.
Right. Which is one of the things I was thinking about. And well, the worst thing, I can't believe this is the rule. And that is to fast load, it must be done in EA.
Right.
It can't be done using reserve power.
Yeah.
Which to me is moronic, to say the very least.
Mm-hmm.
Because it makes it, in some cases, totally unusable. Because you have to plan ahead of time that you're going to be using the weapon this turn. Now, given that.
Right.
Okay. Some of the changes I was thinking about was, number one, more power.
It's already got 40.
It's got 38.
But you're right. Oh, it only has 38?
And it's got 38.
Oh, well. Yeah, I could always use 40.
It needs 40 is one of the things it definitely needs.
Yeah. It might even need more than 40. I don't know.
Oh, I would love to have. I think 42 would be better. But I'm not.
Yeah.
We're trying to push things when it comes to a cruiser.
I know.
You know, but the reason why I think it needs more power is this. That is, we have to change these heat torps from a 3-turn army weapon into a 2-turn army weapon.
Right.
Because that's the...
Now, understand, if you fast load it, the hold cost goes up, which makes it even worse. So it's... If you fast load it, then the hold cost goes from 1 to 2,
which is basically the same cost as a first turn arming.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely encourages you to every 2 turns fire your heats.
Right.
Plain simple. Now, because I think that's one of those key things that it's the only, I think it's the only thing that could possibly help it.
Mm-hmm.
The only other thing I was thinking of is possibly adding 2 phaser 1s.
To give it, okay, so it would have 6P1s, 4P2s, and 4P3s.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think weapons-wise, and there was another one that I was thinking of, which is kind of, this one's is definitely off script.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to design of prober ships. And I think I'm not, it's one of those things that I said is off script, so I'm kind of like, I don't want to do that. But at the same time, I think about it and go, you know, that might really help things tremendously. And that is have one target actuator facing rear.
It's not a bad idea.
Because that's one thing I noticed about the Heats. Their left side, right side. So they can go, they can fire at 180 degrees. They can fire right directly behind them. But they can't.
Oh, it's even better than that. You can retarget your Heats. So one of the interesting tactics you can do with it is to ballistically target it and write down that right after launch, it changes targets.
Yeah. Now, there's one thing that which is a bane for them, which is they are like drone users in that there is no self-control when it comes to the torpedoes. They are controlled completely by the prober ship. So you can't launch these and then wild weasel.
No, you can't. But what you can do is, and this is nice, is, as I said, you can ballistically target it and then retarget it. And that does give you some interesting options. So, for example, you can fake somebody out by ballistically targeting it. And they say, I'm going to get you with a wild weasel. And they launch the weasel. And eight impulses. And then you destroy the weasel. You phase it down the weasel. And eight impulses later, it retargets. Because the ship and the weasel's already passed its So basically, you're hitting on another shield. So you can play games like that. You can possibly also set it up to, he's got a down shield facing away from me. I'll ballistically target it, go past him, retarget, and then have it swing back around and nail him on the down shield. So you can play games like that. It does have some possibilities. Now, the downside to retargeting is that when you retarget, if the Heat hits within four impulses of retargeting, it goes away and does no damage.
Right, which is that's the issue, is that there's that four impulse delay, which even if your opponent is within range within those four impulses, it does nothing.
Right. Now, I have to recheck the rules, but I don't know if your opponent knows if it retargeted or not. Do you have to announce a retarget or not?
Let me look. I'm right here. I'm right here. The Heat can change its targeting once during its entire duration. Must be secretly recorded in advance at the time of launch. Huh?
Right. But do you have to announce that it changed targets or not?
Let me look. This changed impulse and new target must be secret recorded at the time. So basically, you have to do this at the time of launch.
Right. Right. You have to write it down. But do you have to announce when it changes targets? Certain things will make it apparent if it retargets.
No, I don't see anywhere it says you have to announce it. Wait a minute.
Okay.
Change of target is it says the change of targets is announced in launch plasma torpedo steps of the seeking weapon. The new target must be revealed. So yes, it is announced.
But
at that point, does it matter if you're doing the ballistic targeting trick?
Well, if you know that you've been, if a retargeting happens, and you can look at that and say, I can run through this thing and get within close enough so that when it retargets, I will be within its myopic range and did no damage.
Right. And here's the thing. To pull that off, what you need to do is you have to have the ballistic hex to be basically facing your opponent's ship, so that it looks like it's going directly at your opponent's ship, but you're really ballistically targeting a hex beyond the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Or between you and the ship, because that's also the possibility, but that's, I think, is more rare.
Yeah.
But, and it'd be kind of obvious that when the target changes, because of, or at least when the target is not on him, just for a plain simple reason, it's going to go right past them. There's going to be, and then he'll realize, oh, it's ballistically targeted. And then, of course, change the target is going to be for himself, to him. And the thing is, this is this kind of feature that, again, it just points to the Omega Octant Empires were more designed to working as part of a fleet, in my mind. Because changing targets, what's the one time you want to change? Most of the time, when you're going to change targets, you're going to change targets from one ship to another ship. The whole idea being, we're going to launch it at the cruiser. No, it's actually, in the mid-flight, it changes to be this frigate over here that you hadn't thought it was going to be targeted on.
Well, but you still have to write down the two targets at the moment of launch. So it's not like, oh, that target was destroyed, I'll just retarget it, not waste it. No, you can't do that. Unless you know that the original target's going to be destroyed, in which case, why do you even bother to retarget? The most useful feature, thing I found for the retargeting is so you can actually launch non-facing plasma torpedoes ballistically targeted and then retarget them. So it basically, all the plasmas have a 360 degree arc.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, true. Very, very much so. But of course, that means they're also going to be delayed. So they're going to be in two different volleys, which isn't always good, because a lot of times you want it to all be part of a single unit, kind of, so it's more powerful overall.
Well, you can still arrange that. Or you have left side and right side. So I can fire four of them directly to the front, all ballistically targeted, and all change their target at the same moment.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. And of course, there's one thing which we have been neglecting discussing at all is the target accentuators,
right?
Continue.
Yeah, and it is they have in the regular alpha plasma torpedoes, you have 40 speed plasmas. I can't remember what they call
Sabos.
That feature. Sabos, right. But Sabos, you're using a little extra power. You get a faster torpedo. And the faster torpedo actually has more range because it's moving faster and it decays based on number of impulses, not on range traveled.
Mm-hmm.
But the Sabo torpedo does not is the same power as a regular torpedo.
Right.
So you're, other than a little bit of energy, you're not giving anything up to use a Sabo.
Mm-hmm.
But the target accentuated heat, it loses 25% of its warhead strength right off the bat.
Right.
And you use more power.
But, that happens with the Sabo, but of course you're doing twice the speed.
Yeah, that's huge. That is huge.
That's important. Because that means something that is for eight impulses, which, if for eight impulses, let me look at this. If you, let's say that you went a nine impulse non-accentuated torpedo, it's 12 points of damage.
Mm-hmm.
For the same torpedo, if you launched it as accentuated, it would also get to range 9 and do 12 points of damage. But it would get there faster.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And possibly even hit the person at a closer range. Because you're going twice the speed.
Yes.
So, yes.
And
the thing is, if you actually look at the numbers, if you accentuate one that's going to be for 12, okay, yes, it does only 9 points of damage. But, again, that means, okay, out to range 24, mm-hmm. which would normally be out of range, it now does 9 points of damage.
Yeah.
So that extension of the range allows you to do greater damage at a greater range.
Yes.
Which is one of those really neat things about the target accentuator, which is why, because the thing is, the target accentuator, the problem with that is that it's currently only FA.
Right.
So, but the target has to be in the front arc to fire at it, which is why I was suggesting having one that which is rear arc,
or even an LFL and an RFR.
That's an idea.
Yeah.
And I think I'm not too terribly concerned about the additional power because it's 1 point of power. Have a point of power it's 1 point of power for 2 turns.
Right. And then I think it's a half point of power to hold.
Yes, half point of power to hold.
Yeah. So already your target accentuated torpedo, you add a point of power. So it's instead of taking 6 to arm, it takes 7 to arm plus the power for the target accentuator. It's getting to be a very low efficiency torpedo. And now you have a maximum damage, 12 points of damage. Even though you've got 5 of these things.
4.
No, the one I created, I added a 5th one. Front arc. Did you see the cruiser I sent you?
Yes.
SSDS.
The SSD, which was separate from the actual the SSD that has the weapon chart on it. No, I didn't actually look at that one.
Oh, okay. That's the one that's actually on Starfleet Battles Online. I added a 5th heat.
Ah, okay.
Because, boy, did it need it. And even that wasn't enough.
Ah, that's where the 5th heat is. Yeah, but the Barry, that's the problem. Lord have mercy.
I know.
And that is...
What else?
No, Barry, yeah. The problem is you added a weapon without adding power.
I know.
That's...
Well, I didn't play test it that much, and I quickly discovered that ship just could not win. It ran out of power pretty quick, as you pointed out. 4 heats just wasn't enough because people were like, you know, if you fired it at long range, you turn and run it out, and then he's empty and you come back in,
mm-hmm.
just like any other plasma. Because unlike most plasma arm ships, the heats really have a very limited range.
Yeah, when they're not accentuated, yes.
Yeah, and if they're accentuated, they're so weak to begin with that it's like, okay, I'll run through your heat, take the damage, and then I'm in a knife fight, which you're not going to win.
Understood. Well, see, again, this reminds, to a certain degree, this reminds me of the Andromeda too.
Yeah.
Because what's the key thing about the Andromeda, other than, of course, the defense? And that is, it has a two-turn arming weapon. Yes, it doesn't do, you know, maximum of like 40, maximum of 40 points of damage from the from the two heavies, if you go back to the original Andromeda, and it has six phaser twos.
Right.
And those don't do squat unless you get close in range. But so in the case of the prober, if it had more power to to have it so those heats are no longer a three-turn arming weapon, but they're a two-turn arming weapon. Now
that would help a lot.
That would help a lot. That would allow you to beat on your opponent every other turn. And I think the additional power could help it do that. And the only reason I was also recommending the rear target extension, as I said, is because of arcs. And without wasting one single hex on the whole Blisk targeting trick.
Right.
Because the problem,
now the other thing about
is that the problem with the ballistic targeting is that, of course, at the very least, it's got to go one hex forward, and then change direction. And again, you have to have the target extension where it has to be pointing towards your opponent, which means in that case, it has to be a forward arc anyway.
Right. Now, the target accentuators have to roll the hit. So it would suck to launch a torpedo, then fire the target accentuator, and it missed. Now I've got an accentuated target a torpedo, which does less damage, but it's the same speed as a normal torpedo.
Yeah.
Oops.
I agree there.
Now, it's interesting that the target accentuator does not go in the direct fire section of the firing of the impulse activity. It's 65, I think it is. Scout functions or something like that is when you fire it.
Okay, oh, that's what that means. Okay, doy. I was wondering, it's like, oh, it says effect, eight. It's like, eight? What do you mean, eight? That realizes eight impulses.
Eight impulses.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but here's the thing, is that you fire the target accentuator before you launch the torpedo.
Right, so basically.
In the same impulse.
Right, it's like a dizzy dev. In that you're pre-announcing that you're going to be using it.
Yes. Now, here's the other thing. I can accentuate on reserved power. So I could be sitting on non-accentuated torpedoes, and I fire the target accentuator. Oh, it missed. I better not accentuate my torpedoes. What's the point? They're going to go the same speed and they'll be less powerful.
Understood.
Yeah. And the accentuation only lasts eight impulses unless I fire another, etc. And the ranges of that target accentuator are kind of wonky. If it's too close, it's less of a chance to hit.
Yeah.
Too far, it's less of a chance to hit. It's only in a certain middle range that it's got a really good chance
range
of
13.
Hitting.
Which, oh, geez, that makes things really difficult. So, it just accentuates the point. Accentuates the point that this ship is not designed for close in combat. It's meant for long, medium range combat is what it's designed for.
Yes. Yes, it is. And now, in that sense...
Mm-hmm. Continue, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay. So when it comes to the accentuate, so you don't really want to be cleaning in close with your opponent, which is kind of obvious, I think.
Well, any plasma torpedo ship might have the same issue.
Right. But at the same time, that's why I felt like it needed the two phaser ones, so that it had a little more direct fire punch that the plasma ships normally have.
Right. And I agree. Yeah, two extra P1s would probably help a lot.
Yeah, especially because the great thing about phaser ones is that they're capacitors. So that you put it in and it's a battery. So you don't ever have to charge it anymore. So it costs you zero to hold it.
Yeah.
Now, one other thing that I noticed, something that I realized you didn't point out.
Okay. Now, oh, by the way, can you check the SSD that I provided to see if it truly has 38 power?
Okay, the one for let me look. We've got the five left warp, five right warp. That's 10. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times 2 is 20. So that's 30 warp, 2, 4, 6, 8, 38 power. I don't see any other impulse. Yep, it's 38 power.
Okay, so it needs more power.
Oh, yeah.
So say 6 more.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe 4 more.
Yeah, I thought about 4 more. So it's 42 power, and I'm going...
And the two more T1s, yes.
Yeah. So, it's... Now, here's the one thing which you didn't point out, and I understand why, because it only works in the latter part of the game. And that is, there's an ability that the prober have, which is interesting, to say the very least. It's something to think of. And that is the ability to drop its wings.
Oh.
Because it can drop its wings, it will not affect the shields. It will not affect the arcs, which is kind of weird, but okay, I can let that go. But more importantly, it doesn't affect the shields, but it affects the movement cost.
Yeah.
The movement cost one ship now becomes a movement cost of a two-thirds ship. And the reason why I say this is for the latter half is that when you've lost left warp and right warp, because remember, what's in the middle of the ship is center warp.
Right.
So if you are able to focus your damage to the systems to be on the wings, take all as much damage on the wings as possible. And then drop the wings later on. You actually can increase the amount of power you have available to you to move and fight.
How does that affect turn mode? Does the turn mode get worse if you drop the wings?
No. I'd have to double check. But my guess is that it would retain the turn mode B.
That's an interesting tactic. I forgot about that.
Yep. I noticed that and I went, wait a minute. That's an interesting thing to do, because I don't see anywhere where actually by doing that you drop shields or anything like that.
Uh-huh. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's neat.
Yeah.
I had not thought of that.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, as I said, you know, that's one of the things that if you have to plan for it.
It loses turn mode.
Yeah, I noticed that for if
it goes from turn mode. Let's see.
Right, at least one box on both shield wing shields.
Turn mode, there's a turn mode B and a turn mode C. Hang on a second.
Okay.
Book scan.
Okay. Look at this. It says primary hull remains fully operable starship with reduced movement cost. The movement cost for wingless ship is shown on SSD. For example, a cruiser of cost one would have its movement cost reduced to 2/3 for jettisoning its wings. Shields.
Oh, without at least one box on both wing engines, it goes to turn mode C.
Right.
So if you lose all your left warp if you lose all your left warp or you lose all your right warp, you go to turn mode C.
Yeah.
So if you drop the wings, you go to turn mode C.
But again, to me, the critical part about this is you have to do this later in the turn. After a lot of your left warp or a lot of your right warp is gone.
Yeah.
So you're not losing that much power. You're not losing that much when it comes to weapons.
Right.
Now, obviously, at that point, you've got at least two down shields at that point.
Yeah. The wings have all your hull is in the wing.
All your forward hull. The forward hull.
Aft
hull. And then you have center hull in the middle.
Yeah. Right. So now you have some front and rear hull. You have two fronts, two rears, and two center hulls in the center.
Right. So to me, the only thing that
all your lab is in the wings.
Right. Which I really don't care about. But
right.
But if you think about it, if you look at the damage allocation when it comes to the wings, it's got the phaser threes. Okay, for one volley, you take out phaser threes on one side. And then the best actually has to be a phaser one. But, you know,
I think you have to drop the wings both at the same time.
Right, and then, of course, then there's the forward hull. That gets hit pretty heavy. So that they just get bye-bye-bye. Aft hull also gets hit bye-bye-bye. And then, of course, then you have the left and right warp. They're going to survive a little bit longer, but there's going to be a point where it's worth it to actually drop the wings. Because you have overall more power available to you because of the movement cost reduction.
Yeah, it's basically you're crippled. Hey, drop them.
Right.
And any extra power I might want to add into the center section to make the wings even more.
Right. That's what I was thinking about. The additional 4 points of power, add them as 4 impulse in the center.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that could that's one of those tricks that I would really like to see if it would pan out.
Yeah.
As I said, it'd be after at least 2 battle passes. You know, assuming that you can have your opponent hit on 2 different shields on 2 different sides of your ship.
Right.
Or not even 2 different sides. You'll have like your shield number one go and shield number 5 or number 6. You know, that's a little more wonky just because of it's harder to judge. You know, because shield number one, you can take either side. So which one do you take?
Right.
Don't know. But it's definitely one of those tactics that I would love to try out and see how well it would work.
Yes, I agree. That's a neat idea.
Right, because as I said, the damage allocation, I mean, it screams it when you look at the wings that they actually can be dropped off, because the forward hole the forward hole and the aft hole are there on the wings.
Mm-hmm.
And those are those are the ones that are hit the most. And then, of course, then there's the phase of threes, which gets, of course, get hit the most.
Yeah.
Obviously, what do target extension wearers get hit on? They get hit on drones, I assume.
I would think, yeah.
My bookmarks and target accentuators, damage. Take 15 points to repair. Yikes! Yeah, target accentuators are destroyed on drone damage points.
Yeah,
that does not surprise me at all.
But I think putting them to LFL and RFR might be a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, you're right. That ship is designed for fleet actions because they actually make a target accentuator cruiser.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which has got less heat and more target accentuators, and it's just a fleet support ship.
Yep, agreed. Yeah, that's right. I saw that ship with that you sent me. And I looked at it and I go, ooh, this might be it. And I looked at it, it's like, no, this is a fleet support ship. Hey, again, I said, just points out how much of a lot of the weapons are more designed for fleets. You know?
Yeah. Well, the Prober in particular are more designed for fleets than anybody else.
Oh yeah, I've read the history about the Prober. I've read some of the background. And one of the things with the Prober is that they tried to build the ships with the least cost.
Yes.
And that's one reason also why they look like the way they do. You know, when it comes to the center hull, it's like same center hull, just kind of just attached more together, which is basically what it is. Of course, the one thing that to me is weird, I think about it and go, okay, how would this work when it comes to an actual model? Really, if you think about it, how would that work when it comes to launching the torps? Because you would think that basically you have, I think I've seen pictures of it, which is basically the two sections are more like cylinders.
Okay.
You know, but if that is the case, how do you get it so that the weapon that's part of that cylinder doesn't hit the side of the ship? Because honestly, that's the kind of thing that you would expect, like in the case of like the Andromedan bases, they've got those weapons that are basically they're marked NF, non-functional,
right?
Because of the battle station is a collection of the satellite bases connected up, and the inward facing. Weapons are non-functional, but they're still there. And you would expect the center weapons to be non-functional. But, of course, you can't do that because they need those weapons. So it's like, how does it actually work when it comes to a real ship?
Well, you have two-dimensional thinking. You need to think three-dimensionally.
No, I'm thinking three-dimensionally.
Center section might be a cylinder that's raised in respect to the other two. So it's LS weapons fire above So when it fires an LS weapon going left, that torpedo goes over the hull on the left-hand side.
Yeah. The only way I can think that... For a cruiser working, but for a dreadnought, I have a hard time imagining.
Well, the dreadnought has three center sections, right?
Right. That's why I have a hard time imagining that. Because I can see it for a proper cruiser, in that you have like two half tubes. You know, one face.
Well, no, you have three cylinders, but the three center sections are all cylinders, and the inner cylinder is raised with respect to the other two cylinders. Now the problem is that the side cylinders. If the left side fires, it only has left side weapons, right? Or does it have left and right side weapons?
When it comes to the dreadnought, it's left and right side, just like the cruiser does.
Mm.
And all three of them. See, that's why I question. It's like, how would this work as a ship itself?
It's wonky.
I love the kind of modular design, even though they're not modular. I like that concept that they just say, because Lord knows the Tholians use the same thing. They use the PCs as
a pinwheel.
Not a pinwheel. They use the PCs as a basic structure and built, they attached multiple of them together to create ships before the Neo-Tholians showed up. And they had their dreadnought, which was what, like four of them connected together, and the destroyer.
Right.
Destroyer was two of them connected side by side. I like that idea, I really do. I'm just not sure how it works when it comes to the firing arcs and how they actually would actually really work. I can see it for the cruiser, where you had these half pipes, where one's looking up and one looking down. That's fine.
The only place I ever saw that in the rules was like with the Klingon, it was a C8 or C9, where if it dropped certain things, certain firing arcs improved.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they might have done that with the Fed, too. If the Fed did the saucer separate, I think some of the phasers improved their firing arcs.
Right, which is
but
why...
But that's the only two places I've seen it where they even thought about the issue of, that blocks that.
Right, exactly. And that's one of the reasons why I thought that was kind of strange, that the prober, when it drops its wings, doesn't improve the firing arcs at all. My guess, it's one of those hand wave them things that, we don't want to have to deal with it, so we'll just say it doesn't change the arcs at all, and that's simplify the whole thing.
Well, the other possibility is it's a plasma torpedo. So if I fire the plasma in the general direction of the enemy, it can then adjust its course. So if I shoot it off to the left or to the right, and I kind of direct it down under the ship, and then it kind of picks back up, which you wouldn't see in a two-dimensional battle, but...
True. It can be more of angled inside the ship.
Yeah.
And that would kind of work out. But anyhow.
Yeah.
So I think we got some good ideas here when it comes to modifications to the ship that will definitely improve it.
Mm-hmm.
But it should be interesting to see how it all works out, because obviously the biggest issue, and we both agree on this, which is the heat torpedo doesn't do that much damage.
No, it doesn't, and the target accentuates. That's the problem, is that there's a certain optimal range for that. And if you're too close, you can't use it. If you're too far, you can't use it. And at its optimal range, yeah, the Heats can actually hit pretty quickly. But and I just saw the rule tonight when I, just before talk show, I was looking at it. It's like, oh, I didn't see that before. Was that you can you fire the target accentuator before you launch the torpedo?
Right.
So
what segment?
If it missed it,
do you remember?
You just say, what's that?
What segment?
Scout functions.
Oh, okay.
So you fire the target accentuator. And oops, it missed. Okay. Then when I fire the torpedo, I don't put the point of reserve power in to accentuate it. And you can fire a torpedo later that same impulse.
Right. Or, heck, you don't have to be the same impulse. In theory, you could launch it an impulse or two afterwards. Obviously, the important thing there, of course, it's going to be that it only stays in effect for those 8 impulses. And
right.
Obviously, if you really need to, you can fire another target accentuator at that target to extend it for another 8 impulses from the firing of that second target accentuator.
Right.
And then,
although the
yes.
Chances of being in the optimal range where the hit number is decent, that's a pretty narrow range.
Oh, agreed. And again, see, that's the one thing I was looking at, and they match up, which is the best range is what? Range 13 for the target accentuator. And at range 13, that means you should hit for 12 points of damage.
Right.
Assuming the target accentuator hits.
Yeah.
So, actually, overall, when it comes to versus a plasma F torpedo, that's pretty good. That's a little better damage than a plasma F does.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So,
but then again, if you had a ship with 5 plasma Fs versus and remember, it accentuated, it's only doing 12 points of damage max.
Oh, understood.
So that's a max of 60 points of plasma damage. That's one EPTS.
Right. Again, it's like the Andromeda. Andromeda cannot kill you in a single blow. Heck, most ships can't kill you in a blow. Even 2 right. blows for the Andromeda, it can't kill you. Unless it gets on that same down shield.
Right.
The same shield, and you actually knocked it down. Assuming that you actually knocked it down. Because, you know, obviously the TRs aren't guaranteed. You have to get really freaking close.
Mm-hmm.
To get that close, and in that case, that you might be a little more difficulty than you expected. Which is range 3, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get the range 3 to have the best chance to hit 20 points of damage, which is like 20, 20, 20. I think it's 20, 20, 20, 18, 15, 12.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while since I looked at the chart, right. So I can't be guaranteed that's the actual damage. It's close to that, you know. But anyhow, so basically it takes multiple – any ship is going to take multiple hits. Now, obviously, the biggest issue for the prober in that case is that, in my mind, it makes it harder to hit the same shield. At the longer ranges, because of that gives your opponent greater opportunity to change his facing.
Yeah. On the other hand, if it's moving 2 hexes per impulse, that gives you the ability to steer it into a different shield.
Right. And hopefully,
kind of like the probe.
And possibly a rear shield.
Yeah.
Yeah. As I said, I think the one thing that needs you, we need the extra power so that we can take these stinking awful 3-turn army weapons with this lackluster amount of damage it does into a 2-turn army weapon.
Yeah.
That can do 16 points of damage in 2 turns, which turns it into a photon.
Right.
It's a torpedo, but it changes it into a photon when it comes to the amount of damage, assuming it can hit within the first 8 impulses.
Right. Now, the other nice thing about the heat is that, yes, it's wimpier than most plasmas, but it actually handles phaser damage better than most plasmas. It takes about 3-1, not 2-1. So it's a little tougher, more resistant to phaser fire than regular plasma, which is kind of nice. You still there? Hello?
Crap. I hate when I do that. I got a mute button on this sucker, and sometimes I hit mute, and I forget that I'm muted. And I go rambling on. I think you're hearing me, and you're not hearing me. That again, I'm going to say out loud what I have said to myself. And that is another reason to try to give the ship enough power to use these as 2-turn army weapons is the ability, if their opponent decides, oh, I'm going to use the Wild Weasel, use up those Wild Weasels real fast.
Yeah.
And, if your opponent uses a Wild Weasel, they're going to be staying really slow for a long time. And if they're not, the only way to defend themselves against the torpedoes is going to be using their phasers, and their phasers are going to be less effective than they would be against plasma, normal plasma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the ship you don't want a weasel against.
Right. And as I said, I think having the additional energy and be able to do 2-turn arming, I think is kind of critical to the ship.
Yeah. All right, so
because at that point, it makes it a lot more effective. In my mind, it makes it a heck of a lot more effective of a plasma torpedo race. Oh, sorry, Empire. Yes. Sorry, Gene. Because even when it comes to regular plasma torpedoes, you can do a fast load F in your S's, but you can't do that with your F's. And you have to have the reserve power to do it, and you can't. You don't even have the option to do it as part of EA.
Mm-hmm.
Which definitely limits it greatly. Because, for regular plasma torpedo race, you can do it for 2 of them, and the other 2 you can't do that for. So, that's why I think having additional power is a critical thing.
Yeah.
I think it's less of the having the additional heat torpedo and more of additional power.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes for a ship those plasmas can become very, when they're fast loaded, the hold cost gets extraordinarily expensive. You've got a less damage than a plasma S, but holds for the same cost as a plasma S.
Holds for the same cost as the first turn of arming.
Yeah.
All that, Barry, all that means is that it encourages you to launch it every two turns.
Yes.
Because you're going to be paying two next, the next turn, you're going to be paying two anyway.
Right.
So, you know, obviously it's a benefit if you can actually do a three turn and, you know, slowly charging it. But
then
you end up being really poor when it comes to damage per turn basis to be a lot worse than the current plasmas.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree.
Like I said, I think making it, having the ability to do two turn arming is critical to making it a successful ship.
Yeah. So for next week, do you think we should do the Vari?
Oh, I would love to do the Vari next week.
Yeah. Now, there was one weapon for the Vari that I just looked at and said, oh, that's a pretty cool weapon, but I did not incorporate that into the tournament cruiser, and that was the Particle Splitter Torpedo.
Ooh. Is it part of the any of the normal ships? I mean, cruiser-type ships.
The Particle Splitter Torpedo, the problem was that they added the rule, but they never created an SSD that was a ship that actually had it. I think it was only in a captain's log.
That is...
Which I don't have.
Right, that's very, very weird. Because I'm looking at the Vari right now, and at the moment, I don't see even the battle wagon. I'm not sure how big that's. Movement cost of what? One. So, which is interesting. Oh, okay, that's why. Because that's a carrier. Not really.
Oh, okay. But the Particle Splitter Torpedo really wouldn't be useful in a tournament because it's a plasma that goes out to a certain range, splits into two plasmas that have to have separate targets, or maybe even to three plasmas that have to have separate targets.
Okay, so basically you have a torpedo that splits into two and you only can use one of them.
Or three.
Or three.
Or three, yeah.
I'm assuming three would require more power.
Yeah. It does require more power.
In which case, you'd only use for two, and in which case, you have that, you'd do all the expenditure of power, and you'll only be able to use one torpedo, unless you're fighting against something with fighters, like the Soldier.
Or you could be targeting drones, I don't know. But
that's true. But I'm sure that's one thing that, actually, let me take a look, see it. A normal Vari ship. I don't know. Okay. Combine Probe Cruiser. Yikes. You got to be kidding me.
What?
I'm looking at the damage of the particle beams. They suck.
Yeah. The particle phasers are, they do a lot of damage, but it's highly variable. But it's much higher average damage than a phaser.
Yeah, the phasers are incredible. The particle beams suck.
The particle beams are lower accuracy and less damage than a Saltorian particle cannon.
Yeah. However,
they do have some advantages.
Right. We'll discuss them. We'll discuss them next week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to. I don't want to give it away too much, because otherwise we'll have nothing to discuss.
That's true.
But I think we've come up with a possible solution to the prober, and and I would love to play test it.
Yes. Let's see. I'm stuck out in Scranton right now. I'm stuck here over the weekend.
Understood.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely. I think I'm going to be busy on Saturday as it stands. I'm not sure about what I'm doing Sunday at the moment. I might be, for all I know, I might be mowing the grass at the house.
Yeah,
because that got some work done. So I'm happy to see. Yes,
midweek next week I might have some time to play a game. I don't know. So it's. I might, because at a certain point next week, I'm done with my stuff in this part of the country, and then that's 3 days myself in Tennessee. And I'm not sure how that's all going to work out. I may or may not be able to make it to Gamers this summer.
Oh, that reminds me. I have to send Doug my events.
Right, because if I'm in Tennessee, I'm not driving to Gamers of Summer from Tennessee.
Understood.
And it's just too far.
Yeah.
And it's not just like the closest part of Tennessee. It's like Western Tennessee.
Right, I was thinking about
that. That's a long state.
Oh, I know it's a long state up. I've looked at on the map. And it's like, wow. it's not that deep, you know, but
no, it's not.
Very wide.
Yeah.
Take Pennsylvania, cut it in half. That's what it reminds me of.
What's that?
Take Pennsylvania, cut it in half, like when you have the top and bottom half.
And then put them side by side.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm not even sure you can side by side. Just cut it in half from top and bottom. And that's about how deep Tennessee looks to me. Now, this is obviously, I think I got the distance is wrong, but, you know, it's reminiscent of it.
So let's just say that from the Kentucky border of Tennessee. So if I go from Kentucky to Tennessee, I can be in Alabama. Let's see. If I'm on I-65 and I cross from Kentucky to Tennessee, 3.5 hours later, I can be in Alabama.
Cool. Dang. That's one place I've not been. I've never been to Alabama. I haven't been to a lot of the states in the country, but that's neither here nor there. So with that, I think, Barry, I will bid you a nice little discussion here. Well, we'll see you next week.
Yes.
Okay. See you.
Okay. Bye.
So had a nice discussion about the prober and how to fix it so that we actually have a workable tournament cruiser. I'm not sure what we're going to play on play testing. What I'm hoping to play test with Barry is not against like a Klingon or an Alpha Octant ship, more along the lines of an Omega, whether he wants to choose the Mazron or wants to choose Trobriand or one of the other ones which we've played in the past. So you can get a better issue, things resolved, because I think definitely the Phaser 3s are going to become an issue if you want to go against drones, because it's not going to do well against drones. But again, I think Omega should be separated from the Alpha Octant when it comes to tournament cruisers, have its own separate tournament that just is just Omegas, and that's it. And Hopefully, maybe, just maybe, we might be able to get a quick little playtest group, maybe 4, maybe 6, if we're really lucky, of players that are willing to play Omega ships. And maybe we can come up with a kind of a Swiss kind of tournament, just have some fun with it, and play out the different ships, or maybe have, you know, maybe a playtest day kind of thing. We'll spend the day, you know, we'll dedicate one Saturday to stay online and play as many games as we possibly can and write up any playtest reports that we can and you know, record those games. You know, we have the logs from the client, so we have those, see what happened during it and record, save them off and save off the ships and all that kind of thing. So I think, you know, I think it would be really great to do something along those lines. But first, you know, I think we have to get the ships into shape first. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.